All right. Welcome to the BIM Heroes podcast presented by Evercan. My name is Cody Whitelock, and this is a podcast that we're starting for the BIM Heroes Summit and talking about how the technology and state of construction is at this point. And I'm a virtual construction manager here in the United States for a company called Barnhill Contracting Company. I'm joined by Ralph Montague and Vinny Quinn. And I'll turn it over to Ralph to introduce himself.
Hi, everyone, and thanks, Cody. I'm an architect by background. I've been in practice for 30-plus years. For the last 15 years, I've been focusing on BIM consultancy, so helping project teams to implement BIM through a range of consulting, production, and training services. And very interested in helping the industry. So I've spent many years trying to help the industry through this digital transition, which is very interesting. So yeah, that's my interest. The BIM Coordinator Summit, or the BIM Heroes Community, is a project that kind of started started with COVID. You know, when everyone went into lockdown, and we started this online engagement with people trying to help them understand BIM, and yeah, it grew into a community. We had our first conference in 2021, which is an all virtual conference, and then we had a hybrid conference last year in Dublin, live and broadcast internationally. And you know, we're planning the same thing this year, and the community has really taken off. I think we have about 30,000 followers internationally from 160 different countries. So it's been very exciting.
Vinny, how about you at Evercan? Sure, Ross.
Vinny Quinn is my name. I'm one of the co-founders at Evercan. And I mean, we were building software for cameras for many years before we settled in on the construction industry. That was in about 2015. And so we were kind of coming to construction from the digital side. And either myself or all my business partners had a background full-time in construction. And since then, it's been a phenomenal learning experience to see how technology is used. We've gone from being a company that focused on the fixed position, always on camera, to the full reality capture, anything that takes an image on a construction site and turning that into useful data. And it quickly became clear to us over the last few years that it's, you know, the purpose of having good live images, you also have to have a plan, and where we want to be is where those live images match up with the plan. And it's been an exciting journey. So we first went to the BIM Coordinators Summit last year, and just we met people who were really, really enthusiastic about where construction technology was going. So we wanted to get more involved this year.
Yeah, Ralph, that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about a lot, is this community that you're building that's outside of the summit, and obviously the summit itself. There's not a lot of summits that are put together in the industry that are focused more on the learning aspect, which you talked a lot about in your intro. And you know, one of the big focuses of our company this year is, instead of going to conferences that are centered around technology focus like Autodesk or Procore or something like that, we're going more towards these conferences where we're starting to learn in more of a community aspect instead of trying to sell us technology. I think we're just in the industry, we're so overloaded with technology right now. So we're going to a conference and seeing 2,000, 3,000 different types of technology, these large conferences are really overwhelming. I wanted you to just speak about what you're trying to do with that community and the pinnacle of it with the BIM Coordinators Summit.
Yeah, well, I think our focus has always been community rather than events. I mean, the way we see the summit is like an annual get together of the communities. Like the family gets together for Christmas once a year to meet up, but it's not actually about that one day. It's what happens for the other 364 days that's important. We're really interested in this idea of community because anything significant is going to require the coming together and collaboration of many people. And so it's always community. I mean, business is actually a community if you think about it. I mean, the way business works or industry works, I know people don't call it community, but it is. I mean, that's what it is. So our focus has always been on community. But I think what we try to do different was we wanted to focus on people who wanted to make change. So, and that's why we called it the BIM Heroes, because, you know, the way we see it, there's people who really want progress and they want things to get better and they're really pushing. And, you know, and for us, those are the people we wanted to engage with because they're making a difference. I mean, there's so many people in industry that are undecided about this digital transition or even actively trying to avoid it. and you could spend your life trying to convince those people. And I mean, they'll just suck the life out of you, I think. Yeah, and so we deliberately made this effort to focus on people who are moving the dial, moving things forward, and we called it BIM Heroes because it's actually quite hard to do something significant like that, to make change. It's not the easy thing to do. The easy thing to do is do nothing, just go with the flow, just do what everybody else is doing. I mean, that's easy. Like anybody can do that. Yeah, but to do something different, to really push the boat and move ahead, you know, push for progress, takes a special kind of attitude. And we want to gather people from around the world with that attitude together to make a significant change. Because I've been in the business of talking about BIM for 15 years, and it's just been so slow. You know, change has been so slow. And, you know, I think to move the dial, we just needed to gather people from around the world, and that's the purpose. So that is the focus. Although the event is fantastic and it's great to meet up with these people, it's great to, you know, people that you've been working with online or but never seen, and for people to come together and meet and shake hands, and you know, it's fantastic. So it's I really love the event, but actually our focus is on the 364 other days.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that 360, because you've got this, you know, community online that you're starting to develop out really well, and that center for all of us to kind of communicate on a platform. And one of the challenges that you see in the industry is there's a lot of silos, not just within the technology, but the actual silos of the different parts of the industry, whether it's architects not, you know, engaging with engineering the way they should, or engineering not engaging with the contractors. And our industry, much like the medical field, is so intertwined. Every person that's in this industry has a lot to give back to it. And with what you're trying to do with that community, I'd like to get your and Vinny's take on how you're handling that aspect of trying to bring us all together and trying to become less siloed of an industry. And then Vinny, on the other side, you know, what's Evercam or the technology that you're seeing trying to bridge that gap?
Mm. Well, from our side, we wanted to create a platform where companies like Evercam and other sort of leaders in the field could have an audience, because, you know, you're absolutely right. Everybody's doing fantastic stuff in their field, but it's getting that message across, you know, across the board so that even clients can understand the importance of reality capture before the project even starts, and they can start putting that into their project requirements. So, you know, rather than sort of a contractor coming at halfway through the project and saying, you know, yeah, I've got a good idea, should we include some reality capture? And then people haggling about the budget, whether it would support that or not. So, you know, we wanted to create this platform where people could put out their great work that they're doing to an audience, and you know, and this, particularly this audience of people that I spoke about earlier, this group of individuals who are really pushing the boat out, you know, if you can talk to that group, you know, that's going to make change, and that's what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, and Vinny, on your perspective, what do you think in terms of trying to, what you guys are doing at Evercam to try to bridge that gap?
It's very like what you said earlier there, is that you have different silos, and you have different people with different responsibilities, not always talking to each other. And like what we've always loved is that there is still one truth. There is still one you know, there are a lot of images with timestamps that show what something, where it was at a certain time. There are 360 images or drone images. And the idea from, you know, our side has always been that, like, everyone should be using those. Even the people who might start a project not wanting to, the fact that they're there, it sometimes they'll work in your favor, sometimes they might not. But at the end of the day, they are the truth. And the more you can share them with people, the more the project is likely to get done on time and on budget. And we've been kind of banging that drum for ages. But as you said at the beginning, Cody, about, you know, not necessarily going to a conference where it's all about which product you're going to choose, it's about how you're going to learn. We would be in that camp as well, in that, you know, the way things are going, we're all in the industry going to have to learn to work with different tools. It's not going to be a case of, well, we're a construction company and we only use these and we're going to not do jobs where something else is specified. We're all going to have to work with what the client wants or what's required or what's mandated in different areas, different countries, different types of projects. So, you know, that's what I like about this, but also the caliber of people we met last year there was a lot of decision makers there from the client side, from big companies who were looking around for not just the exact technologies, but looking around for the type of people they like to do business with and the type of ways they like to do business. And that's where we want to be, is just kind of talking to those people, not in full-on sales mode, more in like, well, everything is evolving. Everyone's got a technology roadmap. Where do you see it going? How's it going to work for you? Where do you see it in 5 years' time, 10 years' time? And they're the conversations that we want to be having alongside meeting our customers who are already using Evercam on various projects and seeing what else we can do for them.
Yeah, that's something else I wanted to dive into is, you know, the state of the industry, you know, due to the pandemic and the challenges we're seeing around people joining the industry. You know, we see, you know, a big need for people to join, to not only drive it forward, like Ralph talked about, but to try to bring some of this technology to solve some of the real challenges that we're facing. You know, as a contractor or design, you know, we kind of want to put blame at each other. And we've done that for years. We've tried to put blame. But we're becoming more and more to the point where we're interconnected as a whole to deliver some of these projects. You know, owners are asking us to deliver projects faster and more complicated than ever in the history of construction. And I wanted to talk to both of you about how do we bridge the gap using the technology of this new generation to help solve those real problems with a generation that is starting to retire, or, you know, succession planning to start to happen. How do we drive that forward?
Well, for some of them, you might just have to wait for them to retire. You know, there's an obvious group of people that don't want change. They've been working in a particular way for 20, 30 years. You know, they've mastered the art of their particular method, and change is actually disruptive. I mean, picking up on what Vinny said there about the single source of truth, or like, a lot of people in construction don't like the truth at all. Like, it's a game, you know, and the game is best played without the truth. Like, it's the ambiguity is for many people the way that they make money. They play off people against each other, and you can only do that sort of corrupt collusion, if you like, in an environment where there's little understanding of the truth. So as soon as you bring something, you know, like Evercam's technology to the project and it starts exposing some truths, it's uncomfortable for certain people. And yeah, you just have, if they're not going to change, you just have to wait until they leave or force them to leave or whatever. But I think clients are probably getting sick and tired of the game, you know, so for the most part, you know, I think this, I mean, the industry has terrible statistics. It's something like 70% of projects are over budget and over time. And so despite this game playing, it just doesn't deliver, you know, it doesn't deliver at a scale. And that's the real problem. We just can't meet the scale. Like, we, even in Ireland, we consider ourselves a first world country, but we can't deliver the housing and the schools and the hospitals that we need for our own society, never mind what the world needs. So, you know, the old school game just isn't working anymore. Yeah, I think we just have to admit that, and people are looking for a better way. And
with that better way, is it a different delivery methods? Is it more technology? That's the big push that we're seeing. Yeah. Is, you know, our senior leadership or other senior leadership groups around the country, we're all in on trying to change the way that we do business, right? Because the way that we look at it in our side of the industry is, if we don't change, then we won't evolve for the next generation of construction.
Yeah. Well, you don't need a change that's like a slight improvement. You need like a 10 times improvement. You know, so, right. I mean, you haven't got time to read a 500-page printed out specification document anymore. Like, you need that in a digital format and tools to go and analyze the text and pull out the relevant information that you need in seconds. So yeah, that old school way of playing the game is not working. Like, it's no point giving people five, you know, boxes full of paper drawings and saying, you know, go and digest that.
Like, especially if you don't have the experience to even know what you're. I think that's something that we fall into,
and particularly for the young people, as you said, they're like, they don't want to do that. Like, as a young person, I don't want, you know, I'm not a young person, but a young person doesn't want to go and read a big document or go and sit at a light table looking at paper drawings. Like, they're used to doing things on tablets and devices, and yeah, it's just uninspiring and demotivating. So it is technology, but technology is just one part of it. I mean, it's a whole mindset that goes behind what are we trying to achieve. And I mean, ultimately, we're trying to achieve communication. We're trying to get information and knowledge from one place to another, and we want to do it as efficiently as possible, and we want that information to be correct. I mean, no point some guy standing on site trying to install something with the wrong information. It's just disruptive, and it causes all sorts of problems.
Yeah, and I want to hit on that, Benny, with the communication aspect of it too. That's what you guys are, you know, I feel visual communication is what you guys are really focused on. And I think that's key in our industry.
Yeah. And as Rob said, there's companies that won't change, and they will minimize the communication they share. I will share what I have to, and if it says the tender I have to share X number of images, that's the minimum I'll do, and I'll look at every single one of them first. You know, there's that also, and you might change some of those companies, but in the larger companies where there are younger generation coming through and they're watching the workflows, and when they're given space to make suggestions and space to actually bring things to the table that not only improve communications, but also then save a bit of time, and then they can prove that they save a bit of money, and then they've got a seat at the table. So it's really just when companies are open to that, and they're saying, well, look, there's no point in sitting and waiting for the tenders to get more detailed and then saying we'll move just as much as we have to. You need to get out ahead of it and say, we are a company that communicates clearly. If there's going to be we're going to help to foresee problems by talking to our clients. At the end of the day, in many of these big international clients, they know what they're building, and they have got another layer of possibly a management consultancy, different types of construction consultancies involved. So the contractors need to be bringing everyone into those conversations early, before anything does go wrong, and communication is the only way to do that. So that is going to happen more and more, and it's just giving people the tools that they're comfortable using, and it's taking them on the journey. You can't just go to certain people who've been doing something one way for years and say, do it this way or die. It's really, you know, do it this way and we'll show you some small improvements, and then you still have to convince people to share information. It's counterintuitive to so many people to share more than you have to, or to share by default. You know, one of my funniest memories from construction cameras when we started this was standing in a city center site in the middle of a busy area with the existing new builds all around us, and the project manager saying, there is no way I'd let anyone record this site here that we're working on. And I just kind of said, here, we have 4,000 glass windows looking down into this hole in the ground. Any of those could be recording you. Do you want to own the process or not? Like, you know, Dublin is small. If anybody wanted to record that, they would be able to look around and find a friend who had a window that oversaw it and stick a camera in the window. Whether you should or not is large, you know, that's besides the point, but you could. So the idea of no one should record this when the entire workforce is walking around with one of these in their pocket and people are starting to share things. And what you need to do is create the culture where communication is shared properly. That footage, data, images, video, that they're properly shared, that you can track who took it, who shared it, should they have shared it. And what you don't want is the oversharing. You know, you don't want that, you know, a workplace accident going out on YouTube because it's really funny. You know, that you got to have a policy in place or that can happen. And that policy, if it's defaulting towards sharing, it'll also have people need to be educated into as to what you don't share and what GDPR, how that works and why. So, you know, there's a fair bit to learn, but the risks of not learning it are not just that you won't qualify for certain contracts and tenders. It's that the very nature of how you do things is kind of at risk by shutting the door to sharing and at risk by, you know, kind of not having policies in place.
Yeah. And that's the next part of the conversation is the workflow need, right? The way that we approach inefficiencies in our industry is not attacking it by saying, I'm going to go buy this piece of technology. I have a workflow need that projects have told us that we need to try to solve. And we look at that as more of a workflow base and then try to associate different technologies to help us solve that. And one of those workflows is just record drawings. We really struggle with how construction has gone for years. Everything was done on paper, as Ralph has mentioned, for years. And our generation, I guess I can call myself that generation, is looking to push that forward into a more digital world to help us with record keeping. I just want to talk about, you know, some of the ideas around how we push forward with projects that are starting now, but in the future they'll be renovated, how that process is being improved with the workflows that we're developing now.
Where do you start? But I think the first thing we should say is there's no such thing as a record drawing. Like, you know, it's some guy walking around site with a red pen and a clipboard marking up a drawing saying that thing went there instead of there. I mean, that's not a record drawing. Like, yeah, and the problem starts is because maybe the drawing was wrong in the first place. So the guy installing the thing couldn't install it where the drawing said, and so had to move it. And, you know, and that's why somebody has to come around afterwards with another drawing and a red pen and mark it up. And, but it's terrible. So, like, it's a big problem. Like, we have to start with that the information that goes to site for the construction and assembly of thing has to be correct in the first place. And if people can carry out the work as per the model or the drawing or whatever piece of information they're using without changing it, then the original drawing would be the record drawing. But that's not the case at the moment. So the first part to deal with is the quality of the information that's produced in the first place. Yeah, is it executable? Yeah, like, it's really funny. I see so many projects that are building BIM models after construction. You think, like, what's the point of that? You should have built the model before construction and figured out all the resolution and the coordination before you try to execute the work. What's the use of going around afterwards? But of course, you do need to capture changes because nothing's going to be perfect. So you do need a process to capture what has changed and incorporate that back into the information so that it's available for the future. And there's fantastic technologies, you know, including whatever CAM are doing and scanning and all sorts of things. But I'm not sure it's a perfected workflow yet. It's still quite cumbersome.
Yeah, and I think, Vinny, that's one of the things that I spoke to your group about is you guys are attacking a lot of those different things of that record per se, and trying to do things on the front end all the way through until we can give it on the back end. And that's always been the challenge, you know, with BIM as well, is that it was always perceived as a design tool to get it to the point where we use it to build construction. But now you're starting to see it used all the way from the beginning of construction, or actually in design, into construction to do logistics and 4D, 5D type technology for cost and scheduling, all the way into now with some of our users that are more high tech and want to use the model to then run their facilities. Just wanted to have the conversation with both of you about, you know, Vinny, on your side, what are you trying to do with Evercam's perspective to try to drive that process forward? And then Ralph, where do you see it going?
At its most basic, you know, when you talk there about the plans and the process, you know, the plans not matching or things not being done differently or not being done as planned, like at its most basic, the way we think is, you know, can you solve that problem with the right image shared with the right person at the right time? Just a single image, you know, is that doable? And that was kind of how we started with dealing with, you know, with Evercam. It's like, we don't have to over-engineer things. It's like, show me that. Does it look like it's supposed to look? Show me the plans. Do the plans look like where we're going? Okay, great. You know, and then you have all the fancy ways of overlaying one and the other and everything. And I think that's very simple. It's the same goes for the drone footage, the BIM model, the walkthrough, the VR, the whole lot. Like it all comes down to what does it look like now? Is it supposed to look like that? Are we on schedule? Are we behind? What needs to happen next? And the, you know, getting that into everybody's workflow, because it's not, you know, it's not just into, there is the workflow on site. There is the guy who has to make sure he can safely drive a machine from here to there in a week's time. And he needs to know that that is going to be stable. And there's everyone else, but there's also the client being kept up to speed. There's all the way up to the marketing people who want to genuinely know if they're going to be able to sell this on time or open it on time or whatever. And the plans help kind of the Reality Plus plans help everybody. So it's getting the available bit of information to the right people at the right time for the right reasons, and defaulting towards sort of sharing it in whatever format they need it in.
Yeah, I think that's, Ralph, one of the big things is a lot of the BIM software that I've used or the processes that we've always had in place always didn't include that reality capture function. And we don't build in a world that's virtual. We build in a physical world. So I think a lot of the challenges that you saw with BIM at the beginning was it was so siloed into the computer that we were trying to solve some of those real life challenges without bringing that existing condition into what we were trying to coordinate. And not,
you say that, but I don't entirely agree that everybody's thinking like that. Yeah, I think a lot of people are doing BIM purely to, as a mechanism to create drawings, you know, their outputs, and they're not using BIM to do what you just described, like trying to resolve things before they get to site. You know, there are obviously some people that are doing great work, but in general, people are not trying to complete and completely resolve and coordinate the virtual building before they get to site. And there's so much sort of post-construction BIM happening. It's shocking. Like it's people don't even want to talk about it. It's so bad. Like we were on a project where we were advising the client just to come and see how their process was going. And we spoke to the contractor, and the contractor said, my plan is to build this building and then send all the drawings to China and then create the BIM model to meet the BIM deliverable. Like that was the plan. And I thought, yeah, that's shocking. It's terrible. But the way the documentation had been written, they could get away with it. So we do need to use that virtual environment first to get it as right as we can before we get to the production site. And then I think we need to start seeing a construction site like a manufacturing assembly line, where, like in a manufacturing assembly line, you don't change what you're installing. Like, you know, you could be at the very beginning of the assembly line. You install the thing you have to install exactly where it's meant to go, because you don't know by the time that product gets to the end of the assembly line what else is going to be in there. You know, whereas on a construction site, you'll have, you know, carpenters and plumbers and electricians just, you know, I'll sort of put it there, it looks good enough. You know, like, you know, or it's easier for me just to go straight. Why do I have to go around this bend? You know, I can save three bends without knowing what, you know, what the implication of it is going to be. So There's a big mindset change of actually getting it correct first in the model, installing it as was intended in the model, and then using reality capture just as a double check, if you like, to make sure that that's what actually happened, or pick up any changes. But the mindset of using reality capture to let people just do what the hell they like and then pick it up later, that's the wrong mindset.
Is it one of those things that you think that, because what I've seen on our side too is a little bit of that pre-planning. You're starting to see some of that information create the existing condition before we get to the individual pieces that the building is going to sit on, per se, or the bridge is going to connect to. I think that's always been one of the biggest challenges in our industry, is capturing the existing condition that we're going to build upon. And I just want to get an idea from both of you on where you think that is at this state versus where we were, you know, 20 years ago when, you know, BIM had just got started. I think we've taken some leaps and some things that we would still have a long ways to go.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see Vinny's camera sort of have an alarm on it. So as somebody's trying to install something in the incorrect position, the alarm goes off. And
flashing red light.
Yeah. The whole, like in lean manufacturing, when something goes wrong on the production line, actually the whole production line stops, you know, and people don't want that to happen. So they make sure they do everything correctly. It has to be like that. It's, you know, like you're not installing that thing where you're meant to, because once somebody's installed something and they've left the site, it's really difficult to get them back. They feel they've done their job. And even if they did it incorrectly, like, you know, they're probably being paid so little to do it in the first place that they're really reluctant to come back and change it. And in many cases, they might even forego getting paid just to go to the next job and get paid. So
you're seeing a lot of demoralized people too. I mean, some of them are really good tradesmen. They might follow what the plans show, but it might be wrong. And then now they're told to, you know, rip it out and do it again. It could go definitely both ways, I've seen.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that alarm on your cameras, Vinny.
Yeah. That's a
big red light.
By the way, it might make it a little more subtle than that. But I think that where previously there were photos taken and drawings done or whatever before, you know, a contractor would come on or before a subcontractor would come on to a site and do a job. These days, we're seeing it more and more. It's going to be every square inch of the site is going to be photographed and mapped. And you're going to have a 360 walkthrough. You're going to know the measurement of everything. You're going to know the state of everything. Because you sort of have to, you know, and you have to. And if something goes wrong or something's not done right, it's not prohibitively expensive to go to that area and do the 360 completely again and at least have a record of what's changed, what's different. Is it still safe to work here? The idea of having companies who have in-house expertise, having those expertise able to do those surveys from HQ or from wherever they are. When you're building the same type of data center in, you know, six different cities around the world, you shouldn't need to go and fly anywhere to inspect anything. You should be working faster than that. And if you can have your own expertise, your contractor's expertise, your consultant's expertise, and they're able to say, right, this is what caused the delay or the problem over here. And now we're going to make really clear piece of communication with video and pictures in it and the plan in it. And we're going to use that to show the other jobs that are underway how to avoid that problem. Like, that's gold. That's the gold of when you change the plan, you use the footage you have, you use the communications you have, and you avoid it happening elsewhere. And it might be hard to get the ROI on that right now, but the guy in HQ who's in charge of fixing things that go wrong, you know, those guys know the value of passing that information on, and it's required to have the full recordings of everything to get that right. And again, we're, you know, unfortunately there will always be, and I think increasingly that with, you know, certainly in Europe with pricing and labor shortages and everything, there are contracts that are changing in the middle of a job. There are contractors who can't get jobs completed and they're changing. And when that happens, there has to be a line. There has to be a line of, we are no longer in charge of the site from this date. And the new contractor signs and says, we are in charge from here. And that's where, again, the plan has to be up to date. In, as you said there, Ralph, there's no point in those guys saying, well, we're going to get the plan done in China when we're finished, and then halfway through the job they're like, well, you know, we won't bother, or we don't have it. You know, that it has to be updated there, and so does all the footage of exactly what's where and who's responsible for what. And the next contractor can't properly plan or price it till they have that.
Absolutely. And also, I think the idea that all the consultants and the client and everybody can basically attend the site at any time through technology like yours. So if there is an issue, you don't have to wait a week to get the architect and the engineer and the client, you know, to come to site to discuss something. Like, you can just call them into the project online. Is a massive time saving for everybody. And it's interesting that you say you can't get the ROI. I mean, I think if you look even at a situation like that, I mean, a week's delay to a contract, on a small issue.
Yes. Sorry. What I meant there was you can get that ROI very clearly. The ROI of turning that into a learning experience for prevention for other people. That's what I think people need to learn to do by default without necessarily knowing there'll be ROI in it. That you create what I think what people are not using footage and everything enough for is that best practice, creation of best practice videos, creation of best practice planning, looking at the scope of which things are going to be done exactly the same on the next job, or which environmental factors might change them, and can we go and get some footage to show how that worked in a colder environment or a different weather environment or a different traffic environment. Say, right, we're going to sit down and make the best practice for all these repeatable little tasks on the site, but we're going to make them. We're going to have the videos of where they work best, and we're going to sit everyone down so that everybody knows their job at each
stage. It's like a new form of apprenticeship, you know, where instead of an apprentice following a master tradesman around the site, trying to see how they do it, like you could access previously done work through Capture and learn.
Very much so. And the discussion of them, you know, that is for people who are, you know, new to, not necessarily new to construction, but new to the type of project that they're moving into, for them to be able to investigate multiple jobs that took place in multiple locations over multiple years and sit down with a mentor and look through the best executed parts and the worst and the close calls and the incidents and the delays, and look at all of those and soak that information up, as I said, like, you know, faster than you're going to do by following someone around on airplanes for 6 months.
And that's the next thing I wanted to talk through is, you know, this idea of constructability. Here in the United States, it's a huge thing that we boast about is trying to construct in the best way possible by bringing different experience levels into a room and trying to solve these things. But a lot of the technology that you're starting to see, we're trying to go from a 2D mindset that you have a bunch, you know, 40, 50 years of experience. Now, with people that are coming out in the industry with that 3D idea, we can bring a lot of that information to somebody that doesn't have that experience. And what we're trying to do as an industry here is try to take all those different experience levels on a contractor side, but also bring that with the designers into that constructability mindset and work our way through the different stages of design and trying to bring, you know, here's how, because I talked about it earlier, the buildings are getting really, really complicated. And, you know, there's different experience levels of how skin comes together and how it integrates with the building. And I just wanted to talk about this general concept of constructability and where both of you see that concept going.
Well, the first thing I would say is everybody, every single person has significant 3D experience, because that's the way you live. You experience the world through three dimensions, you know, and it actually takes a skill to look at a two-dimensional drawing and try and figure out what it's trying to say. Yeah, that's a learned skill. But if you took a 50-year-old, well, not 50-year-old, but a person with 50 years of experience and put them in a three-dimensional environment, they would pick up the problems almost instantly. The problem with the technology is the technology is too complicated for those people to get into those environments. And you know, I think that's what needs to change. The younger people with the skills in the technology have to work with the people with experience and bring them into these environments and let them look around. Because you put an experienced person in a virtual environment and give him 2 minutes to look around a space, you'll point out all the problems in a few minutes. I mean, we had a fantastic example, one of our projects, which is a science laboratory, which had a very complicated plant room, because you can imagine all the gases and everything. And what the team did is they brought the maintenance crew into a virtual representation of the plant room. And within, you know, a half hour meeting, they had identified numerous problems, which would have cost, I don't know how much money, I mean, it wasn't quantified, but to fix, had they gone and built the plant room and then brought the maintenance crew in afterwards. You know, like practical things, like where the pump was installed, it was too high that if you loosened the bolts, it would fall. You know, like something a designer wouldn't even think about, because a designer is never going to unloosen the bolts of a pump and try and catch it while it's falling. You know, but the practical experience brought into that environment was tremendous. So, yeah, we have to sell this idea that everyone has 3D experience. It's just we're just not, the technology is just not making it easy for them to get into it. And I think that's where we have to change. If you walked anybody with experience around a building, a virtual building, before you built it, you'd sort out so many problems in terms of constructability.
And the idea of Vinny, that's something that you guys are really focusing on, is trying to bring both of those worlds together, the real world with what you're capturing versus, you know, bringing in the model and trying to see those challenges before.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's the 360 view, the full frame rate view as well. And it's exactly as Rob says, you know, the challenge is to get people using it. And it's like, it's to get people with experience, when they see a line item in the budget, to not think, can I get away with this, or what's the cheapest way to do this? They should be getting excited, saying, oh, great, I can justify having a good 3D experience here, where I can learn and save time and save hassle. And it's not, you know, it's not just the, you know, it's not just the sitting in the boardroom, you know, making decisions and getting things done, or doing the virtual workshops and things. Like, it comes down to small things as well, where if you can have the footage you need for someone to check something on a Saturday or Sunday, and he gets to check it remotely and still gets to go to his kid's football game, you've done him a huge favor by having that in place, and you've got goodwill there, and he's better at work on Monday morning. And then the times when you actually do need that person, when you do need them to go to site, you make use of it. You make sure it's essential. And I would say as well as having the experienced people on site knowing how to work within, you know, the 3D footage that they have, it's having the people work on the 3D side of things with a bit of experience walking around site as well. You know, those guys, they should. You know, I think most companies are pretty good at this. It's not having people who are digital only, that you have to get out and walk around and understand the noise and the smells and the environment and all that. If you're going to plan things, exactly as Rob saying there, like knowing what people are doing, and that you have to sort of plan it, it can be done within a safe environment. And again, it's just like, it's also just getting people to take footage of what they have done. You know, and that comes down to like not anything hugely fancy experience. You know, it's the guy who goes and does a bit of work, and then, you know, there exists a photo of that work completed, so that if someone comes along behind him and pulls it off the wall because they need to get a big machine past it, he can prove that his work was done. They can prove that their work was done. So there's just that idea that reality will be captured, that there will be a recording of what was done. And if that ends up getting undone, or was done wrong, or whatever, that it's going to be clear, or it's going to surface who did it.
I mean, it's really interesting that, you know, the cost of technology versus the sort of human labor cost, that technology is always cheaper. I mean, it's really funny that people can't see that, like, it's that they would strike out a line item on a budget to implement some technology and in turn replace it with additional work by people, you know, like their most expensive resource and most unavailable resource as well, becoming unavailable resource. So I mean, what do you think, Bernie? Like, how do you justify technology spend over human resource spend?
And I
You probably
think
have that problem all the time, don't you?
we have it all the time, and we have seen over the last over the years since we've had a product, and we've had customers who've been using it since we started. And it's not a case of showing someone a thing to say this will save you X. They have to live the experience they have to have an experience of having the footage either save them a significant amount of time or an incident or a dispute or whatever, and then they get it. And it, you know, and sometimes it's the small things, and it's big incidents and that, but it does have to come from how you know, as cheesy as it is, it's not what you do, it's like, it's how you make people feel. And when that person feels that, and that person has that relief of, okay, Grant, now we know what happened, now I can get on with my other tasks, or now I know what I need to do to get this problem fixed. And it's getting, you know, it's having people do that, but also to trust the technology that's there, you know, that because everyone has their trusted people within a company, and they know if they send this person out, they'll get the results that they want, or they'll get the replies that they want. And it's a case of trusting the technology as well. And maybe that's just getting, you know, getting the 360 footage of it and having that in front of you, or going back through, you know, full frame rate footage or something and getting to the bottom of it. And to, I suppose, get to the point to get them in the mindset that they're saving their trusted people time and energy, and they're saving money that way as well. And I think it's also totally understandable. People are also slightly wary of handing to, people don't want to hand decisions to technology. And there's definitely a fear of that. And it's reminding them there that the decisions will be still getting made by the humans, but just with more information. More information more quickly, and more information more accurately. So again, you just kind of have to put those into people's hands. And I've seen, you know, I think there's definitely a requirement for a younger generation coming through to spend time not with the people necessarily in the middle of an organization, but with the people that are much higher in the organization with the most experience and the most responsibility, and literally watch how each other work and say, right, you're taking these five steps to get that bit of information. How we do it, you know, I have it here on my iPad and we do it this way. You know, the guy's okay, well, here's the circumstances that won't work in, and you work together, you know, find it out. There's definitely a bit of that, and I've seen that in action, where I've seen people with who have given responsibilities to younger people, or not necessarily younger, but more junior people in their organization for onboarding and training of new technologies. It's very hard to get people who take on a new technology to sit through the onboarding process. They often think, well, this isn't for me, I won't have to use it, or, well, I've already gone and agreed to pay for it, that's enough, isn't it? And I'll just see the results at the end of a project. And it's like, no, you won't see the results if you don't live in the environment that you know. And sometimes they haven't paid for it, the client has, and so they don't think, oh, it's none of my business, it's there. And you, so having someone within an organization who takes on that role of, I'm going to sit down in the room, in the media room or the boardroom or wherever, with the senior people, and we are going to take out everyone's devices. We're going to put this onto it. We're going to talk through some examples of how it saved us time and money and safety and on a few other projects. And we're going to come back in 3 weeks and do it again. And if, you know, and we're going to give people the data as well. You know, just give them access to the relevant, just the relevant data. Don't overload them with everything. And like, I'll give you a really simple example. This is beautifully simple. We have a tool called Snapmail, and you pick your cameras and you say, send an image by email from these cameras to these email addresses on a schedule. That's all. A JPEG comes by email and it goes out to any people you've decided to send it to. And people often use it to send it to people who aren't necessarily within their organization, or they send it to investors or whatever. we had a very non-techie customer who the boss would not use. He used email, WhatsApp, that was about it. He didn't want any logins, any other things. He wanted the rest of the company to use it. One of, again, a person within that company who was newer technology well, set up the Snapmail to go out to him of each site every morning when they opened and every evening when they closed, pictures of the sites by email. Now, that was just a number of JPEGs that went out. Everybody knew that he was going to look at those. And if he saw a site that wasn't open on time or it was dirty or the road was blocked or whatever, that they were getting a visit or a phone call right away. And he's roaming around in his Jeep. And so he's going, he's got half those sites to visit. So that's a JPEG changing human behavior with giving him the right info at the right time. No training required. He's getting the same one at 6:05. If your site's, if it's not clean outside the gate or if things aren't left the way they're supposed to be or whatever, again, you're getting a call or getting a visit. And it's finding ways to, even though 20 other people in the organization are using all the complicated tools, that's how he consumes his data. That's what informs him. He's happy. And yes, of course, we should be trying to bring him into use anything else. But at the end of the day, it works. So yeah, roundabout way of saying trying to just give people the right info at the right time.
Yeah, Ralph, just talking about that concept is, what we're trying to do and a lot of companies in the U.S. are doing is, as I talked about before, there's this need of succession planning and educating the next generation of AEC professionals. And one of the things that we've really strived to do is, as you mentioned, is that mentorship from somebody that has all that experience that may be leaving the industry in the next, 5-10 years, and really developing that relationship with the younger generation to bring them along to explain that experience and how they got there and try to bring that knowledge to them. And then on the flip side, the younger generation really giving back to that experienced generation, basically on the along the lines of, this is where it's going, and I'm grateful for what you've done to drive this forward, and just look how cool this is going to be to try to solve some of the efficiencies that maybe during your time in construction it didn't get to that point, but in the next few years you're going to see that really change and know that you were a big part of that. That's one of the things that our mentors always talk about that is very different than other industries, other maybe than teaching or in the medical field, is that aspect of giving back. There's nothing better than looking out and going to a building that you were a part of. I've got an example of this, and I want to get both of your experiences as well, is that, help build this beautiful facility in Greensboro, North Carolina, called the Tanger Performing Arts Center. And, challenging project, as you can imagine, but it had a lot of experienced professionals and a lot of younger generation coming in behind to help solve some of that technology piece to solve a really complex project. And what was even more unique is that the facility was going to open during COVID. So, we didn't know that before, but it was supposed to end. The project was supposed to end and COVID occurred. And, we pushed and pushed and pushed trying to get this facility open, and it was delayed to open. So that was one of the challenges. And we used a lot of that technology to solve that. But what was so rewarding at the end of it was all of us being able to go to an event in that facility after we got through a lot of the pandemic, and be able to see all the work that we had done in that facility and all the challenges that we face, but be able to solve it as a team and being able to see that particular event just was really rewarding. I just want to get both of your thoughts on this industry being a mentorship industry, and then not only mentorship, but how we give back as well.
Mm. Well, I think it will be aided by technology. I mean, imagine somebody who's in their sort of late 50s, early 60s. You probably don't want to be going and visiting five sites every day to walk around with young engineers and sort of teach them and explain things to them, because it's, well, it's probably difficult for you anyway because of your age, and but you have all the experience. But you know, with technologies like cameras, like if you could have a young engineer on site with a camera and the experienced person be sitting at their beach house with a, you know, a remote connection, and they could be they could do a virtual tour of a of five buildings, and so a person like that can bring their experience to five projects in a day to five young engineers without leaving their home, you know, but leveraging technologies like cameras and Zoom or Teams or and be trained and teaching and training and mentoring as part of the job, and get much more done in a day than they would if they were driving around in their car and flying from, you know, from city to city, trying to visit five different projects in different locations. So it can become incredibly efficient in the knowledge transfer between people. And then if you also captured that as video for training videos, you know, it becomes something that lasts forever, even after the person's retired. So their knowledge that they've developed through their career is now something that is that stays with the company instead of leaving with the person when they retire or leave the company. So I think the technology is a great enabler for the sharing of information and knowledge, and making it incredibly efficient. So I hope to see more of it. I mean, all the technologies exist already. Like cameras exist. Look at us sitting in different countries, you know, having a conversation.
I think what'll really change there as well is that the mentorship or apprenticeship program has always required people to be in the same place. You know, it just, you know, to have, and not just the same place, but the same time zone, and you know that you're working together with someone, and that's changed now. And there is no reason why a head of, you know, health and safety for a large global organization can't be training eight people in different time zones with good asynchronous communication and loads of video and loads of examples. And they might get together once a quarter or they might not, and they're learning all the time. And that's really the key to it. And it's hard to replace, you know, and we're finding it ourselves as our, you know, our company's growing really quickly and with people all over the world, different time zones, different culture, different languages. And it's hard to replace the spending, you know, 10 hours a day together, but it's essential, and it's really, really valuable to have that sort of breadth of knowledge across the company where you can take different people and you can pull in an expert. You know, you can pull in an expert in a way that you never used to be able to do when it was a physical requirement to go meet that person and take their time for an hour in a particular location. So I think what good companies are doing now is a lot of this, you know, planned training, but also ad hoc virtual training where it's like, oh, we found this problem. Great. Anyone who's online at the moment and wants to look what's going to happen next, this is live. This is exciting. We're all going to fix it and the site's going to be safe again in 2 hours' time. And as you said there, Rafia, also we'll be recording it. So whoever wakes up tomorrow in Australia can take a look. You know, that's how, and there will be all those lovely like libraries of examples, but they won't exist until people start creating them and also being willing to share them, being willing to say, yes, we had this problem. Yes, we have footage of it. Yes, we know how to make that footage acceptable for sharing to the wider environment, whether that's, you know, face blurring or whatever, to make it acceptable, and encourage people to do it and be a company that is proud of owning that process. And I think that mentoring is just going to be, it's just going to be incredible to have people with in different areas picking up those skills. You can have people doing, you know, you can now throw problems out to within your company and you throw them out at night and they get solved because you're people in different time zones, you know.
Yeah, I've seen good examples in manufacturing, for instance, where they're using technologies like Google Glass or where the mentor who's remote can actually see through the eyes of the person who's trying to install something or fix something and help them right then and there with a problem. So if a junior person is having a problem, they just call them up and say, look, am I meant to connect the red wire to the blue wire? What am I meant to do?
Yeah,
and you can answer the question. I saw another example of using drones where they flew a drone up to a particular steelwork connection detail that was problematic, and they got the structure engineer through a Teams meeting. The drone was there from wherever he was to investigate this problem without having to drag him to site, take him up in a lift, etc. So there's lots of opportunities to use these technologies if you want to. I think it's just getting the industry to a point where they want to or see the benefit in it.
And that's a great lead in to this next part of this conversation is, we're starting to do that within companies company-wide, but going back to, what you're doing with the community and with the summit itself and engaging not just your experience from your company per se, but to experience the world's experience. Because I just think that opens a whole nother door to somebody that, like me, that's young and trying to learn from the different aspects, where we might do something here in the United States one way, somewhere else might do it another and better. And trying to learn from that greater community, not just from the experience of everybody that you work with, but from the experience that you see within the community, looking at the different posts and articles that people have solved problems, say, yes, I could go and I could use that same thing and make it maybe even better. And then take that to a new level when you go to the conference and you're seeing everybody at the conference and talking about all these different concepts in the different stages and see where it's going. I'm just really curious mindset of where you think that's going and this whole idea of mentorship, where that's taken us.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying. I mean, the community is the platform to allow those conversations to happen at an international level. I mean, you have conferences, national conferences and local conferences and get-togethers. I mean, they're all good. Like, it's not trying to compete with anything, but it's fantastic to see what's happening in different countries and how different people are approaching things and to learn off each other. And the only way that people learn is through sharing experiences and knowledge. And that's, I mean, there is no other way to have progress other than to give people that are doing great work an audience, because often, particularly for startups, like you're so busy with your product or your business or whatever, and trying to meet the day-to-day stuff that you haven't got the time to go and build an audience or find an audience or find a network. I think, there's terrible statistics, but I think it's like 90% of startups fail because they just spent so much time developing their service or their product that they forgot to go and develop the network. So we wanted to provide the network and make it not just a local network, but an international network that we can see what's happening around the world and try and find the best of the best and combine that. So hopefully that's what it does. It's new, but it's been exciting. Tremendously exciting. All the talks have been fascinating at the last conferences, and there's incredible people involved from all walks. And what's really nice is it's going beyond design and construction. We've got clients who are participating and talking about things that are interesting to clients. We've got people involved in the pre-design stage, project feasibility, project management, sustainability, all those things that have to be decided before you get into design. And then people in the sort of post-construction operations. I think that's really been a slow burner for BIM and technology. It's like, what the hell do you do with all this fantastic data once the building's finished? in many cases, the data just gets parked, on a server somewhere and nobody uses it. And, the poor maintenance people are sort of going around with clipboards and whatever, trying to keep the infrastructure running. And then education and training.
I think there's big leaps.
Yeah.
But I think it also takes more sophisticated client too, to take that on to help us, you know, drive that forward. We see that a lot with like data centers and more tech companies. But you know, I think that's
Well, clients,
the
you have a
next
long-term vested interest, I think, because I mean, you get you get clients that are just trying to develop stuff and sell it on or rent it on, or you know, like they don't really have a long-term interest in the operations and maintenance, but yeah, because they see that it's somebody else will take on that responsibility and it becomes their problem. But then you have clients like data center, you know, that have a long-term vested interest in the efficiency of the building, the longevity, the quality, etc.
Yeah, and
I think
yeah.
was going to say that the you know, that requires having a technology, you know, your own team, but also a technology partner that's going to bring you on, you know, that's going to bring you on the journey past construction onto to dealing with your own team when the building is finished. We're seeing, you know, we're seeing that with some of our data center customers. They're finding those technology partners, and also it does bring back to that sharing as well. It's not, you know, it's not just saying we're gonna get this data and we're gonna have it from you. You know, it's bringing them into the organization, bringing them into the culture, and saying here's how we want to use the data. Here's how we are going to treat our other suppliers and service people when the building is finished. You know that it, you know, it's to Ralph's example there. Like it's not a case of building is it's finished. See you later. That information is not relevant anymore. New owner can look after that problem. And with all of those mission critical projects new, and you see the level of involvement that the client has on in a hands-on level when it's data centers or life science builds, that you know that they're fully on board and responsible, and again they're learning and replicating what they're doing around the world, and if they can find partners who are also global, it's a big help for them to right. Well, you guys know how we like to do this, so. Here's what's going to happen in Malaysia in 6 months' time. Let's make a plan for it. So it's like everybody wins in that scenario.
And learning, I think I liked your point earlier, Vinny, about sort of capturing the learning from one project and sort of bringing that forward, because that's something that doesn't really happen. Like every project is a new adventure, if you like. And, you know, the people who participated in one project have obviously learned something, but they go on to a different project and it might not have the same challenges. But the lessons they learn don't get passed on to other people. Yeah.
And I think that's a key aspect of constructability as a whole. It's not just the pre-planning or the operations execution. It's really that shared of knowledge at the end of it and the lessons learned, and give that back to the next group.
And yeah, so it's fantastic that you guys are capturing that in a way that can be shared. There may be snippets of good, as you said, good practice or best practice get distributed and made available and used not only in training new people but informing the next project team. And if you think of data centers, like companies building data centers around the world, like you wouldn't want every data center to be a once-off experience because that would be well, that would be terrible for everybody, right? Well, maybe not terrible for everybody. Like I think some people actually, again, this is the cynic coming out of me again, but you know, like some people have a business model about making money out of the terrible experience, and it's almost like a badge of honor if you if your project has tremendous trouble and you come in and save the day as a project manager or something, yeah, and you enjoy the firefighting and the thrill of the firefighting, but that's not for everyone, and every project shouldn't be like that. Like you shouldn't have it should be smooth, and you should have learned the lesson from the last project and bring it into the next project, and we should be continuously getting better. Each data center should be a better experience.
Totally. And you can imagine taking, you know, taking it a another step where you have the footage and you have the learnings and all that. And as you say, you're not going to have the same team on the ground if, you know, in the next project. So where, you know, the idea that you would even have that virtual handover or virtual, you know, a real life video meeting from the person who was in charge of one small aspect of a project, talking to the person who's going to be in charge of it, right? We built it in Carlow and I was in charge of all of these HVAC systems. And now I'm going to have my video content that we made and all the footage of how it was done. And I'm going to have a 2 hour call with the guy in Malaysia who's going to be in charge of that. And I'm just going to tell him what I would have done differently or how it, you know, how it went and what to look out for and how I trained these guys and what I did with these suppliers. Like, that could be the best 2 hours this guy spends on the whole project. You know, any small incremental improvement that you can make. And some of those improvements, they're very hard to document. They're very hard. As you say, people don't read 60 pages in advance, and people think, well, I know how to do it. And there will be differences, and there will be local changes, and there will be differences with lots of the environmental factors and everything. But there will be some bit of knowledge that changes over. And I think that also comes down to the people who are sometimes the blockers to that knowledge, just getting out of the way. And of course, you don't want anyone passing on bad habits. But if you stay in the conversation, there will be useful information that's passed from one team, you know, to the next.
Yeah, it's almost like a digital prototyping, isn't it? Like each project is a digital prototype of the next project. So you're continuously improving.
Yeah.
You know, often people say, like, I try and compare construction to manufacturing. People always say, but construction isn't manufacturing. You can't compare the two. But there's definitely things you can learn from manufacturing, even though they're not the same. I mean, the first thing you can learn is that, the argument that every building is bespoke, I mean, it's not entirely true. Like, I mean, the buildings are made of components that are all standardized. Like the products and materials that make up buildings are on the market, and they've had to go through years of research and development and testing to get onto the market in the first place. So you're working with standardized components. Yes, the way you assemble them might be bespoke, but they're quite standardized at the component level. But then also, you know, if you can use that idea of taking lessons learned from previous projects and bringing them into future projects, it's kind of like a repeat process, even though it's a different building. You know, it's
100%. And it's not just your staff, and it's not just your contractors. It's also your suppliers. You're getting a video from one place saying, this is how we install the generators in this project in Berlin. We need you to be able to do the exact same thing on this project in India. Can you do it? And that's, you know, yes, you have 200 saying exactly how you're going to do it, but here's 90 seconds of you must actually be able to deliver this by this date. Can you do it? And when that supplier has to pull in a number of people to discuss whether they can actually take on this contract or not, whether it's roofing or cladding or anything, those people sitting in front of that screen and watching how it was done before, and the company that goes back with the answer of, yes, we can do all of these, but you're not going to be allowed to use this component in here, and you're going to find a cheaper way of doing this, and you won't be able to do this at that time of year because of the heat. Like, that's the company that wins the contract. And when they can, again, communicate back with, where possible, you know, good visuals, what they need to be doing is replying to that with their own video saying, yeah, here's how we did one last month. Similar circumstances. This is exactly how we did it. And that you can do that, that you can organize that within your NDAs, you know, that you can, perhaps you have to blur out this corner and that corner and all that, but that you are allowed to be proud of what you've done and show off and say, yes, we did tackle a job like that on a hill in winter in this environment, and here's how we did it. And yeah, when you're doing that, you know, and you see it with some of the lovely, you know, some of the lovely planning videos that some companies are doing now with the really nice videos of how everything is going to be done, particularly like traffic plans and everything. Like, it's just a beautiful way to communicate. You sit down with a client or a contractor and say, this is how it's going to work. We all know it's not going to work exactly like this, but this is the plan. And the plan, when it changes, we're able to say, okay, can't use that gate anymore. Here's the new plan, and show everybody involved. It's a beautiful way to communicate.
And it gets really exciting when you think about things like AI, like sort of analyzing video footage across, let's say, 100 projects, and, you know, beginning to identify snippets of best practice or even common practice and, you know, and sort of surface those to somebody searching for something. So instead of going looking at 100 videos, like, you can search for, show me the best installation of a generator based on the last 100 projects. You could ask that type of question of your collected footage. Yeah, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
I actually think one of the things that...
ask your footage some questions.
Yeah, just to kind of, talk about that, I think with the workflows that we're seeing within the industry and those cross connections between that, I think that's the next big push, is to help us make those decisions, is to try to figure out those workflows, where the inoperability occurs, where there's some siloed challenges, and try to cross connect that whole process from beginning to end. Because I've always thought that, we talked about earlier that, BIM has been fragmented, that concept of BIM and the technology piece of it has been fragmented because of the process that it's trying to solve. And I think that's one of the things, wrapping all this whole conversation up is, the podcast that we're trying to produce and put together here to be part of the conference every year, the BIM Coordinator Summit, educating and inspiring, different industry professionals in the AEC industry, and bringing that awareness that all of us are having this conversation. And I just want to, have that conversation with both of you, this median of a podcast versus a prepared speech or a written article or a video of somebody doing it. How do you feel that median changes the dynamic of how we talk
about these issues? I think there's probably pros and cons of all types of communication, and it depends what sort of mood you're in and what you're trying to find. I think podcasts are a great way for people to relax and enjoy a conversation, so almost feel part of a conversation, and just to see what other people are thinking. But if you're trying to find out something very specific, you might, prefer to have a presentation or something more condensed. And I think they're all good. Like, I don't think there's one size fits all. But I think podcasts are definitely popular. You can see, I mean, they're very popular for way of people communicating and sharing and exchanging information. And so I think it's a good, we should be doing it because it's obviously something people want. They want to get information this way.
I completely agree. I think there's a nice there's a nice flow to it that brings out conversation that mightn't happen otherwise. And if I had been welcome to jump onto a demo to show you some of the things I was talking about an hour ago, I'd still be on that demo.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have done it. So I think it's a nice medium, and it'll be interesting to see with the lineup of guests what topics are covered. And yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's what I'm really excited about, Ralph, building this out, leading our way to September in the conference, seeing the different mediums and different people we've got lined up to talk about these different topics, but then really leading into that next step, which is to have a full day discussion about all the different aspects of all these different people and where they come from, and really have that conversation, kind of like a fireside conversation, while around us the conversation is happening in a different medium, and then the BIM Heroes community that you have, and the magazine that you put out, just all the different ways of trying to learn. Because I think that's one of the things that I hear a lot from the younger generation as well, is those I kind of get bored with one. I want to learn from different aspects of visually reading different things, and trying to get and piece all that together into, a career. Because I pushed that big in this profession, to our internship program and to others, is that this isn't a job. I mean, you cannot look at this industry as a job. It is a wonderful, beautiful career that you're building. And all the people and all the experiences that come to this industry, whether it's people that went to school in these different topics, or others that never had any experience and joined because they just had that love of the industry. I always challenge them to understand that, I cannot teach you, or somebody that has 50 years of experience cannot teach you what this industry holds in one setting. It takes your whole life, your whole career to learn it. I just challenge them, as we do, our internship program and others that I speak to at different universities or at conferences, is that it's a constant learning and becoming better. Just like you talked about with the lessons learned, it's being better as a team, trying to solve these inefficiencies better on the next project, but also, you know, looking at future projects and how you pursue certain projects is going to be a major part of that. And I hope that's what we're trying to develop here with the podcast. And
I think the cross-pollination of different people and different, like, what's interesting in this discussion is, like, Vinny, I'm sure there was a time a few years ago that you would have thought that what you guys are doing at Evercam has got nothing to do with BIM. You know, like, BIM was a thing that had nothing to do. And yet they're so connected because ultimately it's information and it's, yeah, and that's really what we're trying to achieve with this community is break the silos. We want to say that everybody's involved in BIM in some way, like whether you're a client or project manager or cost manager or sustainability expert or, you know, whatever the way, even if you're a tradesperson on the site, like you're involved with information all the time. You're involved with BIM and, you know, like, so BIM isn't this thing on the side of a project, is actually the glue that's tying everything together. And yeah, that's the kind of conversation you want to have with different people, get different people from different backgrounds. Because as you said, Cody, it's a fascinating industry. It's so interesting. I mean, not only because it impacts everybody's life, but, I mean, like, everybody's impacted by the built environment. Like, there's not a single person in the world, unless maybe you're living in the jungle somewhere, you know, in a grass hut, even the grass hut is a built structure, you know, so you're impacted by the built environment, and the success of the built environment is having an impact on your life. If it's a good built environment, you're having a good life. If it's a bad built environment, you're having a bad life. It's so important. And when young people get involved in this industry, they're getting involved in, you know, something that's so real and so important to everybody. And then when they do get involved, they get to meet such a diverse range of people, which is, you're never bored. Like, you can,
that's what I always say. If you're bored in this industry, something's wrong. You're not in the right industry. Yeah. It's just such a process, right? It's not just the technology. The technology supplements the process that we're trying to create to solve these challenges.
Fantastic. So yeah, looking forward to all the podcasts and all the discussions, and it's going to be fantastic.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank both of you. It's been a great conversation. You know, we look forward, Ralph, to joining you in Dublin in September, and we're going to continue to have these different discussions up into the conference. And like I said, I really want to thank both of you for joining us in our first episode of the BIM Heroes Process.
I want to thank Vinny and Evercam for supporting this podcast, and obviously Cody for your leadership in bringing it together and carrying it forward. So thank you both as well.
Yeah. Really, really looking forward to doing it in real life in September to have us all there. And again, big thanks to yourself, Ralph, for putting the coordinator summit together. Really enjoyed it last year. Really looking forward to it this year. And of course, big thanks to Cody for putting the podcast together. And we're very much looking forward to welcoming you to Dublin.
Great.
Thank you all for joining us.
We'll have a Guinness ready for you.
This is the BIM Heroes Podcast, and presented by Evercam. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.